Welcome to episode 11 of the Holy Bible, the New Testament, a Bible study series on the Anglican Hour. I'm Father Ron Shibley, rector at St. John Chrysostom Anglican Church, the host parish of the Anglican Internet Church. In episode 11, we begin with what the New King James Study Bible calls the turning point in the Gospel of St. Mark. After our discussion of the revelation of the purpose of the Incarnation, in chapter 10, verse 45, we will also discuss the unique quotations, events, and details that are found only in the Gospel of St. Mark. The verse labeled the turning point is a simple declarative sentence typical of St. Mark's austere style. It is spoken by Jesus himself in verse 45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. A proper understanding of the term ransom is critical for anyone wishing to comprehend the meaning of the Incarnation and of Christ's death upon the cross. The word occurs only three times in the New Testament, here in the Gospel of St. Mark, again in Matthew 20, verse 28, and in 1 Timothy 2, verse 6. In the first two cases, it comes from the Greek lutron, based upon the Greek verb lutru. St. Paul's use in his first epistle to Timothy is from a different Greek word, but one which is derived from the same root word and has the same meaning. For this analysis of the Greek language, I acknowledge the original work of the Orthodox Study Bible, New Testament, and Psalms. The concept of ransom can only be understood in the context of a payment for something. In the Gospel of St. John, the same idea, which St. Mark, St. Matthew, and St. Paul call ransom, is called propitiation in John 2, verse 12, verse 1 and 2. In Anglican worship, the quote from St. John's Gospel is part of the comfortable words. A more extensive discussion of propitiation can be found in our publication, The Layman's Lexicon, a handbook of scriptural, theological, and liturgical terms, which is available from our e-store on our Podbean site, www.stjohnc.podbean.com. In the first century, those who spoke Greek understood the word ransom in a spiritual context and not a financial context. A person could be ransomed in three situations: from captivity, that is, to a sinful world; from imprisonment, meaning in Hades; or three, slavery, meaning bondage to Satan. In all three situations, the one who is ransomed owes a debt to the one who pays the ransom. In his death upon the cross, Jesus offered his own life as a ransom for the payment of the sins of mankind since Adam and Eve in the garden. The debt we owe him for offering himself for our sins can only be repaid by acknowledging him as the only begotten Son of God, and by living by his commandments, which is to be demonstrated in everyday life by leading a righteous life according to his teachings. In the opening episode of the Gospel of St. Mark, I noted that one of the themes of the Gospel of St. Mark is that salvation is available to all. The offer of salvation was made effective by the sacrificial death of Jesus Christ upon the cross. In the balance of this episode, I will focus on the several unique quotations, events, and details which are found only in St. Mark's account. Many of these are found in chapters 11 to 15. These five chapters represent about one-third of the Gospel of St. Mark and contain descriptions of events which occur in the last 7 days of Jesus' earthly life. While St. Mark does not recount the Sermon on the Mount or give us a text of the Lord's Prayer, he does offer several interesting details and/or insights into the life of Christ through the use of certain terms or phrases that are not found in the other three Gospels. The first example is the phrase, "out of his mind," which appears in chapter 3, verses 20 to 21, in the prelude to St. Mark's account of the Pharisees accusing Jesus of having a Beelzebub, or Lord of the Flies, or ruler of demons. According to St. Mark's account, Jesus' own circle of friends, and possibly his family, since their presence is noted in verses 31 and 32, that upon hearing of his teachings, they said, "He is out of his mind." This means that they had not yet learned of his mission in the world. St. Mark's account thus makes it clear that, like the family, even the disciples at times admitted to not understanding Jesus' message or the purpose of certain of his acts. The next of two examples is found in chapter 9, verses 44, 46, and 48. Three instances in which a quote from the prophet Isaiah concerning punishment and judgment are found. And they also include a reference to hell in chapter 9, verse 43. The phrase in question from Isaiah 66:24 is, "Their worm does not die, and the fire is not quenched." The message is that the loss of a hand, or a foot, or an eye is better than the punishment in which, quote, "everyone will be seasoned with fire, and every sacrifice will be seasoned with salt," in verse 49. Another message of the text is that Christians can expect to suffer for their faith, which is the implied meaning of the terms salt and seasoning in verse 49. And this is because here salt is used in a metaphorical and not a literal sense. The second example is the advice concerning forgiveness, which is found in chapter 11, verses 25 and 26, and which is similar to the seventh petition in the Lord's Prayer. The quotation comes in the context of the discussion of the withered fig tree and the need to have faith in God. Only in St. Mark's account will you find this advice. "Therefore, I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. And whenever you stand praying, if you have anything against anyone, forgive him, that your Father in heaven may also forgive you your trespasses." The promise should never be interpreted in a literal sense to mean that anything you ask for in prayer will be answered. One should always understand that asking for anything that does not also serve the Lord's purposes is not appropriate in prayer, and further, that prayers can sometimes be answered, but not in the way we expect. Note also that the first century concept of standing to pray, which is referred to in verse 25, follows the Hebrew tradition mentioned earlier and has been replaced by the modern tradition of kneeling. Next, we have the first of two pairs of accounts in the Gospel of St. Mark in which persons are named or mentioned which occur nowhere else in the New Testament. The first of this group is found in the account of the healing of the blind man in Mark 10, verses 46 to 52. Only in St. Mark's account is the blind man given a name, Bartimaeus. Scholars believe this indicates that Bartimaeus was widely known in the Christian community of the first century as a follower of Jesus Christ. He was, as St. Mark describes it, one who, quote, followed Jesus on the road. The second example of this first pairing is found in Mark 14, verses 50 to 52. The event happens after Judas's betrayal and Jesus' arrest, when they all, meaning the disciples, forsook him and fled, in verse 50. Only in St. Mark's account do we learn of a certain young man with a, quote, linen cloth thrown around his naked body, unquote, who escapes capture by shedding the linen cloth and running away naked. Many scholars believe the naked young man was Mark, also called John Mark, and that this account by St. Mark was an indirect and modest way of acknowledging his firsthand experience without mentioning his own name. The Orthodox Study Bible, New Testament, and Psalms mention speculation in the early church that this may have referred not to Mark, John Mark, but to St. John. The second of two pairs in which names are mentioned begins with St. Mark's account of events just before the crucifixion in chapter 15, verses 18 to 21. While all four Gospels identify Simon of Cyrene as the man forced to bear Jesus' cross, only St. Mark gives the names of his sons Alexander and Rufus. The naming of Alexander and Rufus suggests that they, like Bartimaeus in the previous example, were well known among Christians in the first century. Cyrene was a coastal city and region west of today's Egypt and which is now part of today's Libya. Many Jews lived there at the time of Christ. The second example in this pairing occurs at the empty tomb on Easter morning in chapter 16, verses 1 and 7. In no other account is Salome named as being among the women present who were told by the angel to tell the disciples that Jesus had risen and would be found in Galilee. It is also the only account in which St. Peter's name is inserted in the instruction in verse 7, "Go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going before you into Galilee." St. Mark's Gospel includes one unique parable and one unique miracle. The parable is the parable of the scattered seed that is found in chapter 4, verses 26 to 29, and the miracle is the account of the healing of the blind and mute man in chapter 8, verses 22 to 26, which we discussed in the account of Jesus' demonstration of divine power over sickness in episode 8. St. Mark's Gospel is known for the level of detail it provides. In addition to the other events we have just described, there are two small details which are not found in the other three Gospels. The first is found in the account of St. Peter's denials of Christ. While other accounts mention Jesus' foretelling of St. Peter's three denials, only in St. Mark's account do you learn that Jesus also said, "Before the rooster crows twice," in chapter 14, verses 30 and 72. This level of detail suggests a first-hand witness of events. The second example is St. Mark's mention of the time of Jesus' crucifixion as being at third hour in chapter 15, verse 25, meaning 9 a.m. St. John's Gospel identifies the time as near sixth hour, meaning noon, in John 19, verse 14. Two more unique details should be mentioned. They are found in St. Mark's account of Jesus speaking to the disciples at the table following his resurrection in chapter 16, verses 14 to 18, delivering what is known as the Great Commission. Two details of their conversation are not included in the accounts of St. Matthew and St. Luke. The first of these is St. Mark's report that Jesus, quote, rebuked their unbelief and hardness of heart because they did not believe those who had seen him after he had risen, in verse 14. The second is the use of the term hardness of heart, which Jesus had spoken to them in St. Mark's account of Jesus' miracle of walking on the water of the Sea of Galilee. In my commentary in episode 9 regarding the miracle demonstrating power over nature in his walking on the Sea of Galilee from chapter 6, verses 45 to 52, I discuss the spiritual rather than the literal meaning of the term hardness of heart. St. Luke sheds light on a possible meaning when in Luke 24:45, he writes that Jesus, quote, opened their understanding that they might comprehend the Scriptures. Additional clarification of the term is found in John's account of the moments before he went into the Garden of Gethsemane in John 16, verses 12 and 13a. "I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot hear them now. However, when He, the Spirit of truth, has come, He will guide you into all truth." Near the end of this account, in chapter 16, verse 17, St. Mark, and only St. Mark, refers to signs which will follow those who teach in His name. And please recall that one of St. Mark's themes focuses on Jesus' miracles or signs. These signs included the ability to cast out demons, to speak with new tongues, meaning the ability to speak in languages they had not been taught, and does not mean the ability to speak in incomprehensible words, and to take up serpents and not be harmed, as St. Peter did in Acts 28, verses 3 to 6, and if they drank anything deadly, not to be harmed, and finally, to heal the sick by the laying on of hands. In episodes 7, 8, 9, 10, and now 11, I have reviewed the history and authorship of the Gospel of St. Mark and discussed its four major themes: Jesus as the suffering servant, the miracles of Jesus, the message that salvation is available to all, and the power of faith, the last of these illustrated in St. Mark's second account of the feeding of the 5,000 and the 4,000, found in Mark 8, verse 14 to 21. Next time, in episode 12, we will start our discussion of the Gospel of St. Luke, beginning with its history, authorship, language, intended audience, themes, and style. We will then turn to an examination of the text beginning with the nativity narrative, which is unique to St. Luke's account. Thank you for joining me for episode 11 of the Holy Bible, the New Testament. While you're on the website, I invite you to visit the digital library page for our on-demand podcast and videocast archive, the bookstore page for information about all our publications, and a live link to our e-store at our Podbean site, www.stjohnc.podbean.com. More on that in a moment. And the Anglican Hour page, which offers links to our program archive of current and previous series. Producing these programs requires both time and money. You can support this internet ministry in two ways. You can make a direct donation by sending a check in any amount, payable to St. John Chrysostom Church, to our business office address, 7162 Soft Wind Lane, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23111. Or you can purchase books from our e-store at our Podbean site, www.stjohnc.podbean.com. Go to the bookstore page and order using PayPal any of our currently 10 publications. If you'd like to speak with me personally about this program or any other subject, please call on my church cell phone, 804-306-1190. If you do not reach me, please leave your name, a message, and a callback number. Until next time, may the Lord bless and keep you. May the Lord make His face to shine upon you and be merciful to you. May the Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen.